Welcome to Walk the Talk, a private podcast production with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. My guest today joined Twitter in 2009 to, in his words, stalk Formula One drivers, a sport he is a huge fan of. Little did he know that 7 years later he would win the police Twitter account of the year, resulting in a paid trip to California. Harry Tangay is a 27-year veteran with the Devon and Cornwall Police. Currently, he is a firearms commander, VIP protection officer, and a post-incident manager. If this wasn't enough, he is also a senior investigating officer for fatal and serious injury road traffic collisions. The youngest of four children, Harry is happily married with two children of his own. His hobbies include helping those achieve their Duke of Edinburgh awards. He is a strong advocate of social media and the benefits it can offer the modern police force. But that path hasn't always been smooth, and Harry made the national newspapers for all the wrong reasons. Harry Tangay shares his own frank views on social media, well-being, and the post-incident treatment of firearms officers. So join us now as we journey around a 5-mile circular walk close to the Meldon Reservoir in Harry's home county of Devon. Here we are today with Sergeant Harry Tangay, who's police officer with the Devon and Cornwall Police. Good afternoon, Harry.
Good afternoon, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. We're walking on a nice little walk today from Okehampton around the Meldon Reservoir. Do you like walking?
Yeah, I've done quite a lot, really. Well, for the last 30 years with the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme. So one of those things where I did my Duke of Edinburgh and then sort of kept turning up to help out. And so here I am, 48 years old, still turning up like a bad penny helping out. And of course my dog loves it, Arthur. He's absolutely loving the moors.
And what sort of dog is Arthur?
He had a very dainty border terrier mother and a very chunky farm Jack Russell. Very rough and ready dogs from a beef and sheep farm. So he's come out as a more on the dainty side, but with the dad's character, I think.
Certain people have a story to share, and I think sometimes it's a matter of time before the right platform presents itself. So did you find Twitter, or did it find you?
Well, it's very clear it found me. You'll see that it says that I started in 2009. Well, that was because I'm quite interested in Formula One, and I wanted to stalk a few drivers, because what you get if you do follow an individual you're interested in, you get some personal stuff straight away or some emotional stuff, and they tweet it out. Well, just look at what Trump does, of course, which wouldn't necessarily, once by the time it's been diluted through the system, you get a more formal corporate response. So that's why I was really doing it, and I wasn't interested in followers or anything like that. And it was only sort of a couple of years ago, was it two or three now? It's time's gone so quick. And because I'm dual roled and I do the traffic work as well, it goes alongside us in Devon and Cornwall because we're so large a force. I got an interest in road safety, really, and even though it's sort of quite a boring subject to sort of just declare to people out there, you know, that the road safety, they sort of switch off, you know, because they're just told not to do things. It's that way of, isn't it, of trying to get the message across, especially to young people, so it really gets them in their chests and they think, do you know. So I did this thing called Learn to Live, and you talk about a couple of experiences, and they put that on a talking heads thing. And the mother was in the room, who was the mother of the girl who died. And I had met her before, but I stupidly looked at her as I started talking about her, and I had a little bit of a choky up moment. And it suddenly went a little bit viral. My force came to me and said, perhaps you should do something a little bit, because your social media, your private thing, perhaps you want to come and do a more formal one for the force, uh-huh. You know? So, and that's really how it started, and really hadn't stopped since, really.
Because it's quite interesting how Twitter, social media, Facebook has come along such a long way, really, in the last few years. And I think a few years ago it would have been unthinkable for the police to really endorse anybody to use it.
Yeah, and they're still very nervous, and we're still behind. I think our force is very much our professional standards, head of professional standards, is our lead on social media. So that's quite helpful.
Well, that's very interesting, that.
And so when things go wrong, or they are taken in a wrong way by media or whatever, because there will be mistakes, there will be misunderstandings, and there will be just, oh, I didn't mean it to sound like that, I see, yes, what you mean. Yeah. Then it's not that knee-jerk reaction, pull the account, stop them doing it, maybe discipline them, give them management advice. And of course that doesn't happen. What they want to just know is, are you on the right wavelength? Are you being positive towards the force? Are you, basically, is it your ego trip? And if you start sliding into those sorts of areas, then perhaps, you know, it's not the right thing to do. And they're very good at monitoring that. And some people will disagree with it. You know, I was called up to speak to them after a certain incident on a bridge. And
I'm going to talk to you about that in a moment.
Yeah, okay. Well, I won't go into that too much at the moment. But it was... Harry, can you just come up? This is seriously not. And you know those when PSD, professional standards units, say, look, it's only a form. And, you know, of course, then you take every solicitor you can possibly. But I genuinely thought, no, I think, you know, because of who he was and whatever. And it was a very much, look, how do we try to avoid this sort of thing? Is there anything we can do to avoid it? Because we are very much in a learning thing.
Yes.
And I found that it's very much to go along with them, but they've got to play their part as well, which they are, luckily, in my force, but other forces aren't. So I think officers, sometimes they can get into a bit of a sticky wicket, and of course the professional standards will even discipline them, thinking, oh, you're bringing the force into disrepute. It's like, just calm down a little bit, can we? You know, this would all be old news in a couple of days, you know, or a week, like mine.
Well, I think it's a common sense thing, isn't it? And it's got to be common sense on behalf of the people that are posting the Twitter, and it's got to be a little bit of common sense on behalf of the people that are letting them do it.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed that. And it is, we are all learning. I mean, yes, fortunate to be in California with the conference there. But you're listening from the Americans, how they're dealing with it. And they're using social media very much as, you know, if there's a shooting or there's an active shooter or whatever, then they are very quick to come onto social media and say, this is the circumstances. Subject has been shot or detained. We are not looking for anyone at the moment. There will be another debrief. There'll be a press conference at 5 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And that stops all the panic out there of, oh, you know, there's another one loose. They're trying to find someone. All these rumours that go around and can cause massive trouble. So I think we did pretty well recently, didn't we, in London, with getting that information out there pretty quick. But you've got to remember, so many people don't watch the news, don't read newspapers, and so it's crucial you have to do Twitter, which is news. It's not social media, it's officially news. And if you're going to want to talk to teenagers or younger people, you need to do Instagram as a force, because if you're not, you're walking through an estate area and you're talking to the parents and the grandparents, and you're just pushing the teenagers aside. And you wouldn't ask a PCSO to do that, would you?
I think it's interesting, though, because we're dealing with a media where it could very easily bite the police, because, in a sense, it's a format that has proven in the past to create news, not report it, but actually make the news. And we're sharing the same platform, so we have to be a little bit careful sometimes,
yes,
of how we
right.
treat it.
You're right.
Which sort of kinds of brings me on to your, what I would call your epiphany moment on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bridgegate.
Bridgegate, when a well-known national newspaper obviously published a tweet that you'd sent regarding a road closure. So tell me about that.
Well, that was... a girl who was threatening to commit suicide in Somerset. I think it was 19 miles to be exact, further up out of our force area. But because they'd put a diversion on for the last sort of couple of hours, I was really having to think, right, we need to sort this out. We can't just have this long term. We need to start thinking about taking down the Armco, getting cars coming back, and so on and so forth. And at that point, I heard that the girl was safely off the bridge. She'd actually been detained. And the traffic were clear. Now, I know that even if you clear traffic straight away, it's a bit like a wave coming and hitting a beach. It takes an awful long time for the traffic to start moving behind, really. And usually about half an hour. I was very careful how I knew that I could draw criticism if I belittled the fact that this person was, I didn't want to give the impression that I was wasting our time, that we had far better things to do, and that, don't worry, you'll be on your way because this nuisance has gone. I was very careful not to do that. And I was very careful with the photograph. Was my expression right? Was it serious enough? Could it be taken as lightheartedness? And it was really, I took a lot of care over that, but it wasn't enough, was it? And it was, the news headline was Bizarre Selfie by Sergeant Tangi. And my thing said, you know, the girl has been safely removed from the bridge and road's clear to move. You'll be on your way, but it will probably take a little while to clear. Uh-huh. And it was pretty mundane. There we go. This is the thing where you have papers who try to make a story out of something as opposed to make a story out of what actually is happening. You know.
And did you get that phone call from the head office?
Well, my professional standards unit, within 2 hours of it going out, wrote a very public one supporting me the whole way. And that sent a little bit of a shock across the whole country, really, those who were interested in Twitter, because they just didn't expect that. They expected the PSD to say, you know, to freeze my account whilst an investigation took place or something, you know. And they didn't. And with that, then, I had superintendent supporting me. I then had assistant chief constable supporting me. And with that, then, I think everyone else felt, yeah, we can. This is right. We can start supporting this. And again, we turned around a very negative story to a positive one, which seems to be happening more and more now.
Yeah, I remember seeing that tweet from the bosses. And I must admit, I raised my eyebrows, but in a nice way. It was a nice surprise, and it was almost like a validatory moment.
Yeah, it put our force in a good light as well, because other forces were saying, "Oh, good on you! You know, you stood up for." Because more and more and more, you tend to worry about things becoming very political. What it sounds like, not what it is, and what's right and wrong. And you and I joined the police because we wanted to do what was right. You know, and that my rules are simple. Mm. If it's right and your intentions were there, then that's all good, isn't it? But it seems not to be enough sometimes. And this is where I think, you know, when we criticise the IPCC and things, we can suspect perhaps that are they being led very much from the politics and that side of things? So, you know, it's sort of a... That's why we always have these issues. We just, as long as we know we're being dealt with fairly, that's all we want, isn't it? And there's a certain group in the public who will never believe that we're right, that's what we want. But at the end of the day, we were taken from a sample of an average bunch of public. We've then been sieved of all the ones with criminal records and those with dishonesty and that sort of thing. We've then been taught the law and impressed upon about diversity and fairness. And those are the ones at the end. And if they still don't believe that what our main intentions are at that stage, then it's a sorry state, isn't it?
I think the thing is, I mean, we're all human beings, aren't we, at the end of the day? And people have got various reasons for doing various things, I suppose, and an ego is probably a big reason.
Yeah.
Sometimes where people come unstuck. But it is nice to see that, you know, the powers that be are sort of finally taking on board social media now.
I mean, it's even just leads to the blogs that I do. I only write a blog when I've got something to say. I don't do one every week or whatever. And it was, that to me is just hugely powerful when you use Twitter then to point things towards there. And then that gets a little bit of a momentum. So it's not just Twitter or something like that. You can direct people towards certain things. So with road safety or something, or, you know, Sarah Green, who I spoke to, she came down very kindly. I've got to give her my respect, really, but I was very suspicious. Why is she coming down to Devon to speak to me? And she said she really enjoyed she loved the blog and the message it was giving or whatever on the way it was written with the post-incident shooting, for example. Now, to get someone, and we discussed it very honestly, very openly, and I think generally she's a decent person, without a doubt, but we've obviously got huge disagreements in certain areas, and of course there's all these other influences that we worry about with the way it's done. But I think my message is really, wow, what a thing. I'm a sergeant in a carrot-crunching Devon and Cornwall police sort of thing, which isn't quite the same, but if you watch our documentary, that's sort of like how it is. Ice creams and seagulls. Very nice. I want to live there, I'll tell you.
But you know, it's a really... I was talking about this with my wife this morning. We were in Biddeford, and I was just thinking back to where I work in Blackpool, and... you'd be thinking, right, the radio will be going bouncing at the moment. There'll be people going from job to job to job. And like these two worlds exist. I'm off duty now and I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know what your local radio channel's like, but I bet it isn't quiet. And I'm thinking, it's like these two worlds exist.
Yeah.
And if you're not involved or part of it, it's very strange.
And of course, with austerity, there's less people about. So we notice our cars are doing a hell of a lot more mileage than they were doing. And of course, you've got more servicing and people are, you know, we are going further distances. Yeah, I mean, I generally find if the weather's nice, just before midday, you can catch up on paperwork and you can do these sorts of things, emails and whatever. That minute hand turns past midday, all the criminals have woken up by then and they've, you know, scratched themselves and they're out on the streets again. So, and then it tends to be non-stop, you know, from then until 6 o'clock the following morning, really.
Well, however busy or not that you are, obviously taking a rest is important, and that's what we're doing at the moment. And just stop for a minute. The view is absolutely fantastic. Do you know where we are?
Well, yeah, we're basically on the edge of Dartmoor that is looking over where Okehampton. We're just slightly west to Okehampton. We are actually west, aren't we? By the time we so we're really on the edge of Dartmoor. And we're very near a large reservoir around here, of which it'll be interesting to see what the level is. Meldon Reservoir, that's the one I'm thinking of on the top of my mind. So we'll hopefully catch that on the way back. But it's stunningly beautiful. It's not always like this.
No. Well, recently it's been reported that the canteen culture in the police has morphed itself onto the social media platform. I'm sure we've all... both of us have worked on teams where there's been that one team member that just seems to suck the oxygen out of the room. But that seems to be morphing on down to social media, partly perhaps due to the closure of canteens and the way we interact as a team once we're off duty. The fact that it has sort of morphed onto social media, do you see this as a positive move, or ultimately, potentially, could it be a bad thing?
Do you know, I... they always say you're best to do it than to do it in a virtual world, aren't you? And you know, if you can drive a rally car around a circuit, it's so much better than doing it on a game, for example. But we just haven't got the other. I'm really one of the things I'm interested in, obviously the road safety side of things, but the other, apart from obviously my firearms world, the other is very much mental health, because it takes so much of our police time, and I currently think it doesn't seem to be very successful in treating it, if I'm blatantly obvious, honest about it. And also, it's there for the grace of God, go we. You know, that could be you and me next year, where someone's struggling. The amount of suicides seems to me to be rocketing. Things that I've not noticed in the past, even just with teenagers and things, especially young men, it's absolutely horrendous. And what you've got now is, in the old days, we used to go along and we used to have breakfast in the canteen, playing cards, and if there was a shout, then we'd already said, designated who was going to go out to that. But generally in the morning, for the first couple of hours in Torbay, for example, it was okay. And then we'd go out and do our day's work, and then we'd come back. And if it was a late shift, we'd have a beer in the police bar just before it closed, sort of thing. And it would be someone's leaving do, and there'd be a pantomime at Christmas, and there'd be the police ball. And all that has gone. And we play rugby. You know, all that has gone. So now you've got... Because we used to live in the same towns.
It was always seen as a luxury in the era of austerity, wasn't it?
Of course it did. We can get rid of that. It's a bit like art and drama, I think. They're saying, right, we can cut all that. Whatever you think about that, there'll be some very strong viewpoints on that. But what you've got now is somebody driving into work for half an hour at least, getting to work. If they're in a certain rural area, they'll brief on their own. They'll go to their suicides, cot deaths, road traffic collisions all day, and they go home alone. And then when they go home, they have their own domestic issues like we all do, you know, and they could be going through a divorce, or a child might be causing real problems at school, or, you know, you could have a terminally ill parent, exactly all that. So nothing, nowhere to offload it. And what we're getting, yes, people use WhatsApp into special sort of, they use WhatsApp to have these conversations. But even the trust in that is slipping somewhere, because if one officer is then suspected enough to have to seize the phone and look at it, and then they find the WhatsApp thing and then find other people have been talking in there, well, they wouldn't have been fishing for it, but, oh, well, you actually said something there which isn't really quite right or whatever, and then there's another investigation in that. So there's a lot of fear, and I'm really worried for the future. I really am, for young people. Just not being able to offload, really.
Well, that's the other thing as well, and it's a bit of a paradox for me, is the fact that, you know, we're talking about social media today, but it's, to me, it's you and I have probably were brought up where, you know, when we were at school, we played cowboys and Indians or whatever, and you learned how to interact with people, yeah, in the playground. You learned how to be an adult in the playground.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to happen now, and I'm just wondering, with social media, with, like, you know, my kids, and other kids, they've lost that ability to actually talk to another human being face to face.
It's a good point, isn't it? And I mean, my kids are 18 now, and, you know, my one of them is just doing a taekwondo competition this morning, and my daughter's in London with her boyfriend, sort of, and his family. So that's fine. But there was a period of time where I was always out on my bike, and I was cycling across Newquay to be with my mates, and my house was too small to stay in. It was four of us kids, two parents, and we had the smallest of little cottages on the top of a cliff. It was very idyllic and lovely, but when you were a kid, you didn't appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. And even if it's you're just discussing stuff. We're lucky on the armed response side of things, because we can sort of discuss, and we do. It's not that macho sort of pull yourself together type thing. And we did it recently. We talked about, because there was another suicide, and we did talk about it. And it's good to do it. But even other big sections don't necessarily get that opportunity. You haven't got that perhaps camaraderie, which the armed response train together, work together, do jobs together, which are sometimes potentially quite dodgy as well, you know, quite risky and things. So, you know, you do get to know each other very well. Sometimes we actually went on holiday together in January, you know, went skiing. And
nobody shot each other.
Nobody shot each other on that occasion. But and we were still speaking at the end as well. It's amazing. But you're right. It has that. My wife says, yeah, but if they were around, computers were around now, that's exactly what we would have done. And yes, it would have been.
Harry, you're a firearms officer. Recently, there's been a lot of discussion regarding the separation of officers post-incident. Perhaps you could describe a debrief following an incident and whether the new rulings are a good thing.
Well, the current system at the moment, and it's always been disputed, and the IPCC want to show integrity, honesty, transparency, so they try to isolate the officers as quickly as they can and get full accounts as quickly as they can before they can be interfered with by other accounts. And that sounds really sensible, doesn't it? And if I was to ask my mother, what did you think about that? She'd say, that makes perfect sense. The problem is where firearms officers are actually these human beings. So, but you've been on a full shift, you've been to several jobs or whatever, you then get called to a firearms job, and you end up having to put all your training into process, because you end up having to challenge someone and shoot them, perhaps, because either your life was at risk or somebody else's was. Then, of course, what happens is what is proposed is they want you, the officer, to be separated completely, taken in a separate car, taken into a separate room. But they say, oh, we're not going to isolate them, we're going to just keep them separate from their colleagues, so they can't interfere with the evidence, and it can't be shown to interfere with the evidence, which is the important thing I think they're trying to make. But of course, then that officer is covered in the blood from the incident, because he's immediately run over and carried out CPR on the dying person, which will happen. We will, if we're involved in a shooting, we'll automatically try to save their lives. And they're sat there in a room, isolated, with none of their mates that they share every job, every fatal road traffic collision they go to, every public order incident. they're socialised with. No, they're taken away from there, and they're sat in a room. And they say, well, you know, we'll give them company, you know, but I don't want someone from occupational health sat in the room keeping me company. You want your friends there. And I think there's going to be, you know, and then for, because it takes a while for people to come to the location for the investigation from the IPCC, etc., there's certain things you can shortcut, but it could be hours. It could be hours that you're sat there away from your colleagues. What is that doing to your mental health at that stage? Mm. And then they say, well, then we'll give you as full account as we can possibly get from you. And if it's enough, we won't ask for another one. Well, can you imagine? The only thing I can compare it to is, God forbid, you are driving along, you're involved in a road traffic collision, and you have somebody that you are, your, somebody emotionally close to you is killed or whatever. It's not the best example, I guess, but we would never take a statement from them there and then. The best evidence is about 48 hours after. By all means, what is now is you give a very short summary of who, what, when, where, as far as you're concerned, and that goes through the Federation solicitor, because, and it's done very quickly, but it's sort of a one-page A4, two-page A4 max. And it's so that they can get on with the investigation, but you don't want what the officer is doing. A little bit what I'm doing now is just talking and talking. They've got nothing to hide, so I'm just going to let it out.
Yes.
And of course, for 5 years after that, not only have you got the criminal court going into every minute word you just wrote, but you've also got the civil court, you've got the inquest, you've got the media, you've got the Human Rights Act, all those going through, and it can take 5 years. So we're saying, let's treat them with a little bit of humanity. And if you think really that the only way to show that they could be trusted was to separate them, that's where I draw the line, because you're going to have a PTSD claim in several years' time like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it would just be horrendous.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned best evidence, like 48 hours afterwards. I mean, certainly, you know, as you've said, and I've been an FLO on numerous occasions, you know, someone that's witnessed or been involved in a traumatic experience, we throw all that support at these people, and, you know, to get their evidence from them, victims' charter, achieving best evidence, we look video evidence, all sorts of different ways of... Firearms officers don't get that.
No, and there's a big play that from the IPCC. Do you know what I genuinely meet? And I was fortunate enough to meet Sarah Green, who's Deputy Commissioner, and I found her very charming, very nice. And she was, do you know, I felt she was genuinely interested. But I also felt we're sort of poles apart still. She's desperately trying to be independent and doing the right thing. And I'm sure there's examples where people will shout about that and say that's up to you. And but generally, I think that's the general case. But we're poles apart still, with her trying to show, she wants to show that police officers are as trustworthy as they are. And because we're in a pretty good country for that, especially when you compare us perhaps to some others. But I mean, my example that I heard, which I thought, yeah, I'll steal that off someone, is they said, would you walk into the IPCC's office, and how would they feel then if you said, you've just, that case you investigated last year, yeah, it was really rubbish, therefore we're going to do a full investigation on it. There's a good chance you'll lose your job. There's even a chance you'll go to prison. But before you go home tonight, we'll want a full account on statement of the whole case. Is that all right? And I think I know what the answer would be. So it's nothing because it's not because you've got anything to hide. And that looks suspicious if you say, no, I don't want to do that. Because police officers, as you will know, Dave, are only too keen to say, look, I've got nothing to hide. I want to tell you everything. And sometimes the post-incident managers have got to say, just slow down a little bit, because anything you say could be twisted by a very expensive barrister in sometimes years to come. Mm. So it's just to be a little bit cautious and a little bit careful. And think of the whole point of the post-incident manager is the police side of things to, yes, facilitate the inquiry. So allow it to happen, but with the welfare of those officers in mind. Mm. And that's where, because we've lived it and our colleagues, and I've had several colleagues who've been involved in shootings, and they've been horrendous examples. They've had horrendous lives for a short time, medium time after that. dealing with all the press and the drip feed of negativity and killer cops and their kids getting bullied in school, your dad's a killer, that side of thing. So it's somewhere none of us want to be.
And that side of things that you've just highlighted is perhaps a side that most people won't even have contemplated. So yeah. As a working practitioner on firearms, as a firearms commander, if you had a wand, how would you wish an investigation to be conducted following a shooting in an ideal world?
Yeah, in an ideal world, the way we are at the moment, we're doing, I like it as far as it can be at the moment, because the PIM procedure is good. It's varied all over the force, I understand, all over the country. So some people would give four lines, and it's almost like a V's to the inquiry. I think post-shooting then, so they would be, we take the firearms officers away, the principal officers, the ones directly involved with decision-making, and that would of course involve perhaps a radio operator, a force incident manager, the commander of that incident, so to speak. And so they're all in a room, and then forensically it's important if that's necessary, but we need to stop things happening like a murder inquiry because we are witnesses. So stop, why are you asking for blood tests to show that we aren't suffering from alcohol effects and so on and so forth? You wouldn't do that to a witness, and there's no reason to suspect it.
I suppose the argument would be is to shut those doors on the defence to argue that you were, I suppose. Yeah. Some people could say that, couldn't they?
Yeah, exactly, and that's where I suppose I draw the line also. Well, you're just going to have to trust us. Unless there was suspicion, unless you thought, or your colleagues thought, they were a bit drunk or whatever. They looked a bit weird. We need to further that. But then, of course, what the concern is that you'll get, you've got night nurse last night. You're affected in the way that you were walking. You were, and a big play will be on that, of course, which is a very dangerous position to be for the officers. Suddenly, you've got 3 days analysing whether night nurse could have affected your way. So it's a bit of an issue, really. But so get the initial account. But in 48 hours, then the full account. And I think at the moment it's to look at any body-worn video before that last full account, before stage four. And that's really necessary, because you've got nothing to hide. But my goodness, you've been through this. You'd like to make an accurate statement. But the initial little briefs you've done, they don't want you to just do an account of that video. They want you to write basically what you felt and saw at the time and why you reacted to it like that. So I can see that, but it's very important where that timing of seeing the video is. And some people would like the full statement before the video. Well, that's just ridiculous, because you'll get two accounts by two officers, and you could well get, if we tested it on any random members of the public, one would say it was a blue Focus and the other would say it was a black Mercedes. Yeah. I mean, it's just, that's why we are, when we're perceptual distortion or tunnel visioned, or, I mean, I remember in my training, so we're doing VIP protection training, and there I am in a car being driven into the range, and I deal with what you see. And basically, there's a set of scenarios which take you up there where all hell is breaking loose, but can you actually bring it down again? Can you then actually levitate it or bring it to the right level of threat each time? So I drive in there, or I'm a passenger in there, and a Mercedes van goes across, door opens, submachine gun, car stops, I'm told that's disabled, I'm out, I grab the notional VIP, who is there, actually, is an instructor, I drag him out, I go to the back of the B range, where then I'm in another scenario. And then it's a crowd control, and you shake their hands, and the VIP is shaking their hands, and they won't let go. So it's very discreet, thank you very much, move them across, thumb technique just to let them go, and then you go into a deal with another. And they said, so what do you think of that? And I went, well, I drove into the range and all hell broke loose. I can't remember why. and they said, silver Mercedes? Oh, yeah, silver Mercedes. Went across, door open, shot, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Do you know what I mean? And we've had situations where we've been training, and a train has gone by because the line's quite close, and we've had to stop challenging the training subject because the train's gone by, it's too loud.
Yeah.
It then goes on, and we carry on. The guy's then lifted or whatever, notionally or whatever, and we talk about it afterwards. And half of us remember the train. Because our tunnel vision into that person, we're making sure that they're not pointing anything else anywhere. We're looking at their hands. We're challenging them. We're thinking, what are we going to do next? How are we going to you know, negotiate with these and so on and so forth. And that the human brain works like that.
Yeah. Which I suppose is reassuring from a training aspect, and that would suggest that the training is pretty accurate.
And it makes you realise that can happen. So it means that you can prepare for it as well, which is so useful. If you know it's possibly going to happen, you're aware of that, and that means you can combat it.
Yeah.
But I think people just maybe think it's a bit like a film with Tom Cruise who never fails sort of thing. And
now we talked earlier about PSD and that, and I've used that phrase before, that drip effect. And obviously well-being within the police force. What is the one thing that frustrates you most about the police force, and what is the one thing that more than anything else we can do to make well-being better for officers?
Do you know, I don't know if we can. Have we shut the door when the horse has bolted? It sounds very negative, that. They are doing well-being, and some good people doing some good work, but it's sort of dishing out... the well-being is really to support sports and athleticism and fitness is really, really good. And because before it was a little bit, well, you do that in your own time. And yet certain aspects, you have to pass fitness tests and things like this. So that is really good, and it can only do good. But I just don't think it's going to be enough. And I don't know if they can do more. It's, how can you replace that at the bar after you've been to a job and you're talking it through, and someone say, you had a bit of a nasty one I heard yesterday. Oh yeah, well, so-and-so, this has happened. Like, oh, well, good on you. That was pretty horrendous. I had one similar when it was so-and-so.
What did you do to, you know, and you don't get that now.
No, you
which
don't.
Sort of kind of takes us back to the original point we were talking about social media and this lack
of
interaction with people.
Yeah, and I think it's really good how it opens everything up and people can see how police officers are, that they are generally, even if they make mistakes, they are generally good people, and that we don't want the bad ones as much as anyone else doesn't want them there. And so it gives them a bit more of an insight, fly on the wall, hopefully, to what we think and what sorts of people we are. And also, I love the way it just gets rid of those... maybe sometimes talking to the converted, but you know, stop search. I don't want to stop search people. It's messy. It's horrible. I could prick my fingers. It's disgusting pockets most of the time. Why do I want to do that? And yet the whole feeling out there is that, oh, police officers just love going around to, you know, sort of persecuting poor innocent people, turning them over all the time. You and I know that's just not the case. But if you've got a bit of a rogue officer who has been caught with doing something, of course that's what the other 135,000 people thought as well.
We all look the same, don't we?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Indeed. Because it's work in progress, isn't it? You've got to be so careful how you put something in. But my general thing is, if it was well-meaning and you weren't malicious, you didn't have a few glasses of red wine and then get all ranty, then it's like walking down the street, really. You're going to talk to people, you're going to joke with people.
Yes.
You're going to give them advice and give them maybe a few views on what you think about stop search and drugs and all that to the person in a, you know, passing by in the street. You know, you'll do that. It's exactly the same social media, but you're not going to become unprofessional.
It's called life.
It's called life, yes.
Well, we've sort of come to the end of this interview, and quite fittingly, we're now on the viaduct of the Waterloo to Plymouth line, I think it is.
You see the reservoir there now, can't you?
The Meldon Reservoir.
You see feel the wind a little bit more here, can't you?
So, beautiful. It's been a fantastic walk. It's been a pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you for being honest.
It's been great to have an excuse to come up here, and Arthur's well chuffed, so the dog's happy. Thank you for that. And I haven't walked here before, so it's quite nice. Yeah.
Harry Tangi, thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you, Dave. It's bungee jump.